Hello, listeners.
Hey, everyone.
It's another episode of the Board Game Brothers podcast. I'm Jeffrey Craig.
And I'm Matthew Craig.
We're brothers in real life.
And game designers in real life.
And this is our podcast where we talk about board games. And it is another regularly scheduled episode, although it's been a while since we put out an episode.
Admittedly. Schedule being used lightly.
Yes, it's another regular episode where we are going to cover a board game, as we are wont to do. So we're going to talk about a board game. We're going to go into detail on how to play it, the strategies that we found in the game, and we're going to discuss the game's design. So, Matthew, what game are we talking about today?
Yes, today we are talking about Quarriors, with an exclamation mark at the end of the name, designed by Mike Elliott and Eric M. Lang, and published by WizKids in 2011. It was nominated for a bunch of stuff, like the Golden Geek Innovative Board Game of 2011, and it actually won Origin's Best Family Game of 2013.
Okay.
So that was neat.
All right. So for a short description on what Quarriors is about, in Quarriors, players build a pool of dice that they then roll to acquire resources, summon creatures, and battle their opponents. If you manage to summon a creature, then keep it alive for a full round, you score glory, which is the victory point in this game. The first player to obtain a certain amount of glory wins. However, if three pools of creature dice are depleted before then, the player with the most glory at that moment wins. So it's a pretty simple game when you kind of break it down. It's a dice drafting, dice pool building game where you have a bag that starts with some dice in it, and you will acquire more dice as you play. And those dice will most often represent creatures, if not resources, that you use to acquire creatures. And the creatures will score you points, and the first person to a certain point threshold wins.
Yeah.
So let's get into grittier detail on exactly how to play this game, and then talk about the strategies that we found.
Mm-hmm.
How about we kick it off with your starting resources and the setup of the common area? What is it called? Like they actually have a name for it in this game. What'd you say?
Is it the quarry?
It might be the quarry. Okay, so you start with a bag with 12 dice in it.
Oh, no, it's the wilds.
The wilds. There we go. Okay. So every player starts with a bag with 12 dice in it. Four of those dice are called assistants, and the other eight are basic quiddy dice. Quiddy is the resource. Quiddity is the resource that you use to purchase more dice in this game. And so every player starts with eight dice that purely just give you quiddity. They have quiddity on all six of their faces. These are all six-sided dice, by the way. So, eight dice that just give you quiddity, and then four dice, which are assistants. They give you quiddity on some of their faces. On one of the assistant faces is a reroll that lets you reroll the die, and in the case of the assistant die, it also lets you reroll one other die. And then two of the faces, I believe, are creature faces for the assistant, and they're like the weakest, simplest creatures. If you summon an assistant and it stays alive for a full round of player turns and comes back to you and you still have it alive at the beginning of your turn, then it scores you one glory.
Yes.
And whenever this happens, by the way, so there's a number of zones that your dice can be in, but essentially you have your unrolled dice, which you roll at the beginning of your turn. And this is, it's sort of like your hand in a game of like a deck builder. This is your hand. You roll your dice, which is sort of like you playing them. And then you use those dice to either acquire resources and by discarding the die, or to summon creatures. And the creatures that you summon go to this sort of active area. That's where your living creatures go. And when they are destroyed, then they go to your discard pile along with the dice that you spent for their resources or the unused dice from your turn.
When you score a creature, it lets you remove one of the dice from your spent pile permanently.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is a consequence of scoring any creature is per creature you score, you're able to remove one die from your discard pile.
Right. At the start of your turn, you draw six dice from your dice bag. And if you do not have enough dice in your dice bag remaining, you put all the dice in your spent pile back into your dice bag. It is a sort of dice building game.
Yeah. If you're familiar with deck builders like Dominion or Ascension or Star Realms, it's a very similar thing where you acquire dice rather than cards. They go to a discard, And then when it's time to draw dice, you put your discard into your bag.
Yes.
Okay, so where do you get the dice from? Excellent question, Jeffrey. The answer is the wilds that we mentioned. So the other part of setup after everyone has their bag of dice is to set out a number of common dice pools, as well as a couple creature dice pools and spell dice pools. And each dice pool has a card that goes along with them to explain exactly what the dice in that pool do, or what the dice in those pools do. So the three basic dice pool are the Quiddity die, the Assistant die, and then one other pool which has portals in it. And the portal die, whenever you draw it from your bag and roll it, it usually will allow you to draw and roll one or two bonus dice for that turn.
Yes, portal symbols specifically let you do that. And the portal die has only portal symbols.
Right. Those dice, by the way, are white, brown, and yellow. If we ever refer to them by their color, that's what they are. So those are the three common dice. They appear in every game of Quarriors. And then the rest of the dice in the game are randomized every round, very similarly to Dominion, where you choose, you know, a pool of cards to acquire or to access for the rest of the game. In Quarriors, you select five creatures and three spells, and each of those creatures or spells will have six dice that accompany it. That is those are the pools of dice that you have access to for the remainder of the game. You never add more creatures or spells, or you never take them away, but they can be depleted, which, like I mentioned at the beginning of this episode, is one of the ways the game ends. It should be mentioned that there's a handful of different types of dice that all correspond to a type of creature, but there are multiples of each creature type. So, for example, there's like a basic goblin, and then there's like a mighty goblin, and there's a brave goblin, and so on. And that exists for all the other kinds of creatures, like wizards or defenders of the pale. So there's dragons. So there's tons of different kinds of creatures that comes in tons of different varieties. When you set up the game, you need to make sure that there's only one of each type of creature represented in the five creature dice pool. Same thing for the spells. There's multiple like variations on the different spells in this game. So you need to make sure that the three spells that you draw and play are three different types of spells, which is pretty much just important because A, it makes it so that when you draw one of their dice, you know exactly what it does. And B, they don't share a dice pool, so that pool wouldn't deplete quicker.
Right. And specifically on your first point, there's no distinction between the dice for the different variations of that, like, creature. So, like, if you were to draw it, then there'd be no way to tell which one it was, no matter what, if there were more than one of the same creature.
Mm-hmm. So the distinctions between creatures, because like you mentioned, if we had two wizard cards, if like to show as an example, the wizard dice would be the exact same for either card. They would have like the same faces with the same stats on each face. But the things that change are the special effects that go along with the creature. And yes, usually these special effects come into play whenever you roll a die and you happen to roll a face that has an asterisk in the bottom left corner. And the creature card will tell you what's different about this creature since it has the asterisk showing on this roll.
Right.
So you can give an example if you like.
For example, the Defender of the Pale, which you briefly mentioned, can have one or two asterisks. And its effect is stronger whether it has one asterisk on the die or two asterisks on the die. Like there's one version of the Defender that makes the opponent's spend more Quiddity to play their own dice, and if there's one asterisk, they have to spend one more, and if there's two asterisks, they have to spend two more.
And there's another Defender of the Pale where when you score it, if it had one asterisk, you draw an extra die next turn, and if you score it and it had two extra asterisks, then you draw two extra dice.
Right.
So that's an example of how the asterisk meaning changes depending on which card you draw during the setup of the game.
Right, and not every die has asterisks, but they will still have effects. So, like, there's some that don't have asterisks, but, like, when they attack, they do something. Or when they die, they do something.
Okay, so you set up the game, and each player has their dice. You choose a starting player, and then when it's your turn, you draw six dice, you roll them, and then you spend them however you see fit. If you have a creature, each creature, if you roll a creature, each creature has a level, and the level corresponds with the amount of quiddity you need to spend from your dice pool in order to field or summon that creature. I'm not exactly sure what the terminology is in this game, but you essentially summon the creature, which makes it active and makes it so that if it survives till the next round, you'll score points. So that's one thing you spend quiddity on. If you rolled a spell die and it rolls face up the spell symbol, you don't have to spend any quiddity to activate those. But those work similarly to creatures where you do need to activate them. You put them in this sort of active temporary area until you wish to spend them. And then with the rest of your quiddity, you can acquire a new die. And it should be mentioned that you can only acquire one die per turn, unless some other special effect from the cards and creatures that you played says otherwise.
Right.
You don't play cards. But yeah, if a creature or a spell says otherwise, you might be able to acquire another die. But for the most part, you can only acquire one die per turn.
Yes. The cost to acquire a die is on the card itself in the mm-hmm. top left. And the points that it will give you if it's a creature are in the top right.
Mm-hmm.
And then additionally, the cost to field the die is on the creature face of the die in the top left, which is that level.
Right. And it's important to explain why it's called a level. And that's because certain dice have different levels to them. So, for example, a die might have one face be level one and its stats might be sort of low. You know, the stats that a creature has is attack and defense. But I think they go by different names in this game, like strength and defense or something like that, durability. So it might have a low attack and defense number, but then on another face on the same die, there could be a level two that has slightly higher attack and defense. And on some dice, they even have a level three that has yet even higher attack and defense. And the level makes it more expensive to field, but fielding it is more worth it because the attack and defense can go a long way in right. the combat mechanic in this game, which we should explain now.
Well, I was just going to say there are some dice and abilities that affect level. They might say to reduce a dice's True. Level by one, which means you turn the die so that that level face is facing up.
Okay, so combat is the key interactive component to this game. You know, we've mentioned that you score points when your creatures survive around the table, and they have what they are surviving is combat from your opponents. But it's not combat like a traditional, like, competitive card game like Magic, where it's like very targeted and calculated. The way that it works in this game is if you summon creatures on your turn and they're in your active area, then before the end of your turn, your creatures all band together and attack all of your opponents at once. So every creature has a power score or an attack score. So at the start of combat, you add up all of your attack scores of the active creatures that you have control of. And then that number is sent at each of your opponents. So if I have a creature with 2 power and a creature with 4 power, that's a total of 6. So that will attack you. That will attack my other opponent and my other opponent. So each opponent has 6 damage coming at them. And then those players have to defend that damage with any of their active creatures. So if you have a creature that has 7 defense, then that creature can defend that 6 damage and that's it. And it survives. But if you have creatures with lower defense, then they might die. And when it comes to the defending stage of combat, players defend one creature at a time, with one creature at a time. And if that creature dies, it's put into your discard pile, and its defense is subtracted from the total attack that's coming at you. So if I attack you for 6, you defend with a creature with 4 defense. That creature dies, but now you're only being attacked by 2. And if you have a second creature, that creature now has to defend. And if that creature's defense is higher than 2, then it survives. It's up to the defender to choose what order your creatures defend in, which could make a difference. In this example, if you defended with the 3 and then the 4, the 4 would have lived. So you probably would have wanted to do it the other way around, since the 4 is probably going to score you more points. It depends, really. So that's how combat works. So you need creatures with high defenses, and you have to hope that your opponents don't have too much attack on their turn, so that your creatures will survive when it comes back to you.
Yes. I think that's almost it for rules. I did just want to mention that with spells, The reason why you put them in your active area is because some spells can only be activated at specific points. So, like, a spell might say to cast it only when one of your creatures dies. That means you put the face-up spell icon die in your active area, and it stays there until you cast it.
Yeah, spells are one way that during combat you can potentially save units that would have died from the combat math.
Yeah, but like some spells will say to only play it during your turn. Some will say to like play it when your unit's attacking.
Yeah.
There's different timings.
For sure. Okay. And there are certain things like spells and creature abilities that happen as soon as you roll the die. So those will happen before you start spending any quiddity to summon creatures, and definitely before combat.
Yeah.
Okay. I think that's basically it. Do you want to go over how much points you need to win? Oh, and then there's one other thing, which is just the other endgame condition.
Well, so we mentioned that when there are three or more creature cards without dice on them, then the game ends.
Mm-hmm.
The other one is just when a player gets to the target amount of points that player wins, this amount of points is lower the more players are in the game. So with four players, it's 12 points required to win. With three, it's 15 points. And then with two players, it's 20 points.
Okay, so with all of that covered, now we can get into the strategy of this game.
Okay.
So the game is pretty simple, like we've kind of described. I think the most complicated thing is just understanding how the combat works. But beyond that, you know, you just roll your dice, you spend them the way you see fit. You only have to buy one die per turn, so there's not a complicated decision you really have to make there. The most complicated thing is just deciding which creature to buy, and based on the way the game works, you know, you win by scoring points, and you score points with your creature surviving. So the best creatures to purchase with your quiddity when it's your turn are the ones that are most likely to survive combat, in my experience with this game.
Yes. Because, again, the only way to win is with points, mm-hmm. and you can only do that if your creature survives. There's no benefit to killing your opponent's creatures, other than your opponent's not getting points.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't get any points for just purchasing dice.
Yeah. When you set up the game, you'll probably have a mixture of, like, cheap creatures to expensive creatures. And the more expensive creatures will pretty much always have higher stats than the cheap creatures. And just right there, that should tell you, like, you should probably buy those more often than you buy the cheaper creatures. Just because, you know, if someone buys a bunch of cheap creatures, they're probably not going to be able to field all of them at once. It's really hard to draw all of your dice in one roll and roll them as creatures, as well as rolling enough quiddity to field them. So they're probably only going to be fielding as many creatures as you are, and if your creatures are bigger, then you have the upper hand severely in this game.
Yeah. It almost feels sometimes like the cheaper creatures are better at, like, putting on a lot of damage, but since they don't have a lot of health, it's hard to actually score with them.
Mm-hmm. The one benefit for a cheaper creature is that if a lot of damage is coming your way, they can help to soften the blow, I guess, so that, like, if you're getting hit by a big attack, your cheaper creature can take the first hit, lower that attack score down, so that your bigger creature, which would have been wiped out if it was on its own, just takes a slightly smaller hit.
Yeah.
By the way, damage doesn't persist between turns, so, you know, they don't have to be super tough, they just have to survive one round of combat, you know, and then the next, but, you know, the damage doesn't stack up. So a creature with high defense, it's not like it'll be whittled down over your opponent's turns.
Right. I think early game, it's fine to get a few cheap creatures, but late, like, you pretty quickly want to get creatures that outclass them.
Mm-hmm.
They work fine early game as, like, ways to combat assistance, to prevent your opponents from scoring with assistance. But yeah, they get outclassed really quickly. I will say, though, being able to roll creatures is really important. And one way you can do that is by adding a lot of creatures to your bag. I think, in general, even if they're bad creatures, the fact that you can field creatures usually makes them more valuable than, like, a lot of other things.
Mm-hmm.
So right. I should preface by saying that we played a four-player game. So we didn't do like two players. I don't know if that's better or anything than four players, if like the pacing's different, but that's like our judgments are kind of based on that, just putting that out there.
Yeah. The four player point threshold is the lowest one, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Because yeah, I can imagine
to be scrapping each other's creatures so much.
True, true. That makes sense. Yeah, the creatures are dying more often, so people are scoring less often. Although that I think makes it even better for like the first player to buy the big, like a creature on the large expensive side and then managing to field it. Like you could just snowball so hard, and if you manage to draw and field that creature three times, you've won the game, because that's it's usually scoring you 3 or 4 points. And I think the threshold's something around like 12 points for a four-player game.
Right.
It's pretty low. Possibly in a two-player game, you might have more situations where it's better to have like spells to like counteract your opponent's bigger creatures and make room for your creatures, or to like have a spell that you can play and then sit on until the last minute so that you stop them from winning. But yeah, in a four-player game, if you stop one player from winning, it kind of really helps the other players win. Because it's sort of like, if you're stopping them from winning, it meant that they had a big creature on the field. So by destroying it, you're sort of like saving your opponent's creatures, depending on the timing of things.
Right. Well, so I think the way to put it is that spells are usually single target, but attacking is a board wipe, or like yeah. It hits everyone. And so it's a situation where you're spending a resource to trade for an opponent's resource, but there's two people who did not pay anything to gain from it. Mm-hmm. Whereas usually when you're attacking, you are resource positive because your one die attacks three times, essentially.
Mm-hmm. I want to bring up, by the way, again, that you only can buy one die per turn. So if you have enough money to buy the more expensive unit, buy the more expensive unit. Like you made the point earlier, like it's good to fill up your bag with tons and tons of units. You know, saturate your bag with units, but it's not like you can do a lot on any given turn to achieve that. You just kind of have to buy a unit every turn. And so just because there's cheap, you know, in another deck building game, having lots of cheap things is a strategy. Like you can fill up your deck or your pool of resources with lots of small things, because then you can acquire more small things. But in this game, acquiring a small thing is just almost strictly worse than acquiring a big thing. Well, so the only limiting factor is just whether you rolled enough money to do so.
I was going to say, all of this sort of implies that you have the optimal amount of resources, but because rolling in this game is very volatile, like, for one thing, sometimes you'll have to pay resources to field a creature, and then you'll only have, like, 3 quiddity left. Mm-hmm. And I think at that point it's fine to get something cheap, because you're still saturating your bag with, like, creatures. But the other thing is that every creature die only has a 50% chance of actually being a creature, because they have 3 creature faces and 3 non-creatures.
Well, actually, the cheaper creatures tend to have 4 creature faces and 2 quiddity faces.
Really?
Or special effect. Yeah. Like, the assistant has, I think the assistant, not the assistant, but the goblins definitely have 4 creature faces and 2 non-creature faces. I think those, like, what are they? They were, like, little, like, clerics in the one of the games we played that, like, acquired spells if they scored. I think they had 4 creature faces and 2 non-creature faces. I guess there's a slight advantage in that regard, but even still, like, the difference between one die face versus having the stats of, like, having triple the stats of the creature if you do manage to roll it, I feel is a little more valuable.
Sure.
If you have the resources. That's, if you don't again, have the resources because you needed to spend them on, you know, you had a bad roll or you need to spend them on fielding creatures, definitely acquiring a cheap creature on that turn is better than nothing.
Right. I think we're mostly on the same page.
Sure. Although, I don't know, at a certain point, like, sometimes it feels better to just get the portal instead of a 4-cost or cheaper creature, because the portal costs 4 quiddity.
Maybe, We didn't really experiment with the portal as much in our games.
But it makes sense to me, because a portal, it helps you cycle through your dice faster, because when you roll a portal, it lets you draw another die and roll it, which means that if you, like, if you bought a creature that's very strong and then it went into your bag and you pulled it out, rolled it, and you ended up just rolling Quiddity face on that creature, it's going to be a while before that die goes back into your discard, then back into your bag, then gets rolled again. So portals can help to speed that up. I think it would probably take a little more testing whether to find out, like, would I rather just have a creature there, or is it more important to cycle through the stronger creatures? I would wager a guess that it's probably more important to cycle through your bag to get to those stronger creatures, because scoring the creatures is so important in this game.
Yeah, but there were a lot of times in our last game where somebody drew, like, four creature dice, but then none of them rolled the creature face.
Right. So, yeah, is it better to have just another creature die in your next turn, or have portals so that in two turns you'll get those four dice again and you'll have that chance?
Yeah.
Again. So, yeah, I think we're both agreeing, though, that, like, the larger creatures are very strong and you should acquire them whenever you have the chance and field them whenever you have the chance. You know, if you have to choose between fielding a strong creature or saving your money and buying a strong creature for that turn and not fielding your creature, definitely field the creature, because that's right. Just how you win.
Yeah. Our games were definitely won by sort of dominating large creatures that yes. controlled the rest of the board.
Okay, so let's see. Do you have anything else to say about the strategy in this game?
Not really. It was hard to really get a lot of strategy decisions or, like, advice from the games we played.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The games ended up being pretty quick. I think I have a theory as to maybe why it was a little difficult to really develop a strategy in this game. But before we get into that, because that sounds like design discussion, if there ever was any, mm-hmm. let's go to the plug section. Do we have, I forget, did we make a name for this segment of the show?
Nope, we have okay, not.
Let's enter the plug realm. And
what about the insert?
The inserts?
Like box inserts?
Okay.
Let's go to the inserts.
Let's insert ourselves into the inserts, and then we will retrieve ourselves out on the other side with design discussion.
We'll workshop it.
Oh yeah, we're working on it.
Yes.
Okay, here we are at the newly named insert zone. I feel like it needs one other word.
Yeah.
Insert zone, insert realm, insert here.
The box insert.
Okay, well, that's where we are right now, and this is where we tell you that we would really appreciate it if you followed us on social media at BG Broscast.
It's been a while.
BG Broscast. It has been a while. It's really showing. BG Broscast on Facebook and Twitter. Hit us up there with suggestions for episodes that you'd like us to cover, and just, you know, in general, you follow us for updates on when our episodes are coming out and for little sneak previews of what we might be discussing. You can go to our website, bgbcast.com, where we have all of our episodes categorized and labeled and tagged. You can use the search bar there to find any given episode if you're wanting to hear our thoughts on any given game. And if you don't see the episode there, again, hit us up with suggestions on socials. You can also go to our contact form that's on our About Us page, I believe. You can throw a suggestion in there, and any inquiries about utilizing our podcasts can be funneled through there. We'd appreciate that. On our website, you can find a link to our TeePublic store. That's teepublic.com/user/BGBcast, where you can find merch with our cool logo and branding on it. That's it for BG Bros plugs. Let's hear it for Matt plugs.
I stream on twitch.tv/twack. That's twitch.tv/twak. I stream on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Friday from 1 p.m. Central Time to 3 or 4 p.m. Central Time. Though recently this month, I have been using Wednesdays to do a lot of work on a video. So it's been kind of a different schedule, but I'll be returning to that schedule in the future. At least in the new year. We'll see how it goes. I stream competitive games, roguelikes. Sometimes I do platformers or speedruns. Every other Friday, I play Hitman 2, and people can use channel points to kind of mess with me, make it harder for me to complete a given mission. So check that out. It's always a good time. You can also check out my other podcast, NetServer Pro, a whirlwind ride through the World Wide Web, where Nailed me and it. My co-host Galen talk about pretty much anything that isn't board games. We've done episodes on movies, TV shows, music, video games, internet web series, and internet culture. We cover kind of a lot of interesting things, a lot of things we think are cool. So if you're into sort of analytical stuff, check that out. This month, I think our next episode, as of the airing of this episode, is going to be the NetSurfies, our little end-of-year awards, where we just talk about good things. So, yeah, check that out as well if you want another podcast. And you can follow me on Twitter at MattCraigGaming, where I tweet about whatever sort of stuff I'm working on or working at, and I tweet my other sort of things that come to my brain.
You know, we should do like a crossover episode sometime.
We should.
Our podcast and NetServer Pro. Maybe if there's ever a board game or a board game related topic that suits both podcasts.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, be on the lookout. Follow us on social media for updates on if and when that might happen. The podcast crossover event, dare I say it, of the century.
Maybe.
We're a fifth of the way through this century, by the way. You ever think about that?
That is wild.
While you're thinking about that, you can follow me on Twitter at Jeff Craig Designs, where I mostly just retweet things about Team Liquid and like funny stuff, and occasionally post a thought that's been heavily filtered. All right, that's it for plugs. Let's get back to the episode where we discuss the design of Quarriors.
Okay. Design time.
Yes. I think we both have the same feeling of the design of this game.
Yes. I feel like we have to just start with randomness.
Okay. We can start with randomness, but I think I have a big idea of like why the strategy feels a little lacking.
Ooh, okay.
Okay. Do you mind if I say that?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. So the reason why I feel this game is really lacking, at least for us, when it comes to like depth of strategy, is because it's like really uninteractive. Like I mentioned that the creatures are the point of interaction, but you don't control them. Like you just field them and they just automate. I guess one point of strategy you can use is deciding which creature takes the blow before the other one if you're being attacked, but that doesn't feel like much. And so when I say interaction, it's not even really players interacting with each other, it's like players interacting with the game.
Right.
Like you don't even tell the game what you want to do a lot of the time. It just kind of does its own thing.
Yeah, but it's a very autopilot game.
And then the other thing that happens that, I mean, the truly most interactive part is the spells, because oftentimes you get to choose when you use them and how you use them. And so like you can do some tricky things like destroying a creature at a pivotal moment, using a reaction to recover a specific die. You know, these are the more interesting things you can do. But because you can only buy one die per turn, it's like really decentivized to buy spell cards. Like
disincentivized, but yeah.
Disincentivized to buy spell cards. You'd rather use that one buy per turn to buy a creature, because creatures are how you win. Spell cards are not how you win. And this game, you can lose a ton of tempo by like not getting the right creatures and fielding them and earning points.
Right. So, creatures aren't just how you win, but they're some of the best removal.
Right. So because the most interactive thing in the game is something you don't really want to get, and the rest of the game just kind of plays itself. Yeah. There's no real place for you as the player to like make decisions and kind of express yourself. The thing that happens the most is just choosing which creature to buy. And after you play a game, you start to realize like you don't really even get a choice. You have to buy the creatures that are going to score you the points in the end.
Right. The creatures that are good very quickly stand out after a game, I think. And they also happen to be the ones that cost roughly 6 or more quiddity.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas like the creatures that are weak kind of also filter out.
It also doesn't help, by the way, that this game, it was probably made around a time when like really paying attention to what any given player is doing moment to moment in a game, like simultaneous turns or making sure turns don't take super long, because the way this game is set up, and it's probably set up this way because that's kind of how other deck builders were set up, is that you don't really do anything until it's your turn. Like, you don't draw the dice until it's your turn. You could draw them at the end of your turn, and then that would at least give you, like, a turn to maybe strategize what you might want to do with these dice. But even still, like, you got to roll the dice to actually understand what it is.
I mean, technically, there is a reason why you draw at the start of your turn and not at the end.
Yeah. And
it's because dice can be destroyed.
Right. But, like, even still, it's like, because you can't draw them at the end of your turn, you have to wait till the beginning of your turn. Then after, you know, you draw your dice for your turn, you roll them, field some units, buy a die, it all goes to your discard pile, end turn. Then you just sit there. You don't do anything unless you had a spell, which we've already gone over. You don't often have those because they're not really that enticing to buy. So yeah, so you just do, not only is it very uninteractive, you know, it's very inactive. You feel inactive as a player. Not just due to the mechanics, but also just due to, like, you just don't do anything for a lot of the time. You're just waiting for other people to take their turn. I guess should be prefaced, by the way, that we only played it in 4-player mode.
Yeah.
Potentially in a 3 or 2-player game, this would be a little bit better. Or more better. Or
a lot better. I also want to mention that, other than casting spells, the only thing you do on the opponent's turn is block, which is always either a non-issue or it's negative. There is no room for, like, outplaying your opponent by blocking, like there is in a lot of head-to-head games. There's no, like, tricky decision-making. It's literally either you don't have to worry about blocking, or you have to sacrifice something, which I think has this emotional element that makes it feel worse every time you do something on the opponent's turn.
Yeah.
There's no, like, gain to be had on the opponent's turn. If you get attacked, then, you know, that's usually a bad thing, no matter what.
Yeah. So you take your turn, and it's like, great, I'm doing things. And then you got to sit there and just, like, await doom.
Mm-hmm.
Anxiously wait for your opponents to either destroy your creatures or not destroy your creatures. And either way, it's going to take time.
Right. I think the autopilot nature, I definitely started feeling throughout the game.
Yeah.
Where, like, the fact that you don't choose to attack, and then you don't choose whether to block, really. And the fact that, like, usually there's a pretty best case thing that you can buy, and there's no reason not to field a creature that you can get, or that you rolled. It's like, it feels like every decision, except for maybe the first few dice you buy, is kind of predetermined.
Yeah. Yeah, in a late game scenario, it starts to get a little more interesting, because now you're fielding creatures, which means you don't have a ton of quiddity to spend per turn. So you're having these, like, 3 and 4 quiddity turns after you field your creatures, which you're like, okay, I can get one die, but maybe I get a spell, maybe I get a portal. You know, that's kind of an interesting, I mean, that's more interesting of a decision. The most interesting decision you made all game is probably that one. But even still, it kind of stinks that even whatever die you buy, it goes into your discard. It might be a while before you draw it. Even if you draw it, you might just roll a blank side, or a side that doesn't do anything but, like, give you quiddity, or in the case of the portal, allow you to draw one more die, which could just give you more quiddity, which doesn't really mean anything in the late game.
Right.
And I think this is a secondary problem to this. Like, the way the combat works makes it feel like autopilot, and then the way that you can only buy one die per turn, and it's very difficult to buy more than one die, makes the dice buying kind of, I think that plays into the aspect that you kind of have to buy, the game basically tells you which die you need to buy. You don't really get a choice.
Mm-hmm. Also, like, the fact that you only win by scoring means that it centralizes it further than it otherwise would. I think part of the reason why it's good to have multiple end conditions in something like this is so that you don't centralize over a few specific, like, pieces in the game. Like, Dominion, you can pile out by getting 3 different piles gone, but also in Dominion, you can score by buying cheap cards like estates. So that gives an alternative to the provinces rather than a, like, oops, the game's going too long, that Quarriors is.
Yeah, the Quarriors has the illusion that is a part of the game, but because you can only buy one die per turn, there isn't really a strategy to, like, emptying piles quickly after scoring a couple quick points at the beginning of the game.
Yeah.
Plus, I want to also mention, okay, I'll let you go, though.
I just wanted to actually start going into the random aspect.
Okay, really quick before we go into randomness, I also want to just say that because the levels of the creatures in this game are, like, there's not a big range. It's either 1, 2, or 3. Like, and the level 3 creatures, you're only spending 2 more quiddity, which isn't even a full die, to make a dice that's like 3 times stronger than itself. And its lowest level was still the strongest, like, option. It's the lowest level of a die is usually still stronger than the highest level of, like, the dice that are cheaper than it, or at least sort of almost the same strength. So I don't know. It, like, you just spend 2 more quiddity and now your die is, like, unkillable. It seems a little bit much. Like, I feel like the game should tax you. Like, if a creature is going to be that strong, it should be, like, the only thing you do that turn, you know? Mm-hmm. But it's not. Like, it only takes 3 quiddity, and you'll still probably have, like, 3 or 4 left over to get something else.
Right. Okay. So, here's I think, the big thing for me that also adds to that autopilot feel is that there's almost no luck mitigation.
Mm-hmm.
So this is what really stood out to me, for reasons I'll get into later, is that pretty much unless you roll one face on one die, there is no way to reroll dice once they're rolled. There's only the reroll face on the assistants, and that's 1 out of 6 faces. So you have to draw one of the 4 dice you start with, roll a 1 out of 6 chance, and then you get the chance to reroll another die. One other die at that. What this often led to was either people getting a bunch of creatures and only rolling quiddity, which meant they couldn't interact with the rest of the game for that round, or it meant people would get their highest level and then everybody else would roll their lowest levels, meaning that their die would be uncontested and free to score. It meant that you could buy a spell to counter somebody's play and then just roll the wrong face, and so your attempt at counterplay would be nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no way to stop that from happening. You just lose the dice and you have to draw more.
Right.
And so this is a game that would have benefited so much from any luck mitigation, rerolling or fixing. Like,
you
this
know,
is
I want to throw out
dice
real
games.
Quick. I want to throw out real quick, just like, if they had just had something to spend your quiddity on to do something that turn, you know, like rather than just acquiring another die. Because if you're not doing anything, it means you rolled a bunch of quiddity. Like, what if you could just spend your quiddity to, like, use a spell for that turn?
Or re-roll dice.
I mean, even if it was just, like, I'll spend a bunch of quiddity. Like, if it cost 8 quiddity so that next turn I draw an extra die, that would feel way better than just, like, buying a random creature that I just want to field creatures. Even if I buy another creature, it doesn't mean I'm going to roll it, you know, in 2 or 3 turns when it gets back into my bag and I draw it.
But
I agree. And I know that you're coming from a place of knowledge when you bring up the idea of randomness mitigation via rerolling.
Yeah. So that's pretty common nowadays in dice games, especially dice games where the dice are to a different end than just rolling good faces. So, which is to say, like, if they give you resources or they have some other component, usually games nowadays will have at least one way to change the die that you rolled. So, you know, like, it'll be re-rolling, or it'll be moving it to a specific face, or there'll be something that is, like, dice agnostic, where, like you said, you can get a beneficial effect regardless of roll. So, yeah, there's a lot of things you can do. I don't remember exactly what all other dice-based games were out in 2011. I mean, this is a decade ago at this point, so it's kind of an older game, but I really want to say that they did a pretty good job at fixing this in a remake of the game. And this is part of why I wanted to talk about Quarriors, is because it's the rare instance we can talk about a sequel / remake / reimplementation that fixed a lot of the problems of the original, which is Dice Masters.
Right. And I know you're real big into Dice Masters.
I was pretty big for a while. Shout outs to STL Dice Masters. Good scene. So, Dice Masters is a competitive head-to-head 1v1 game, and because of that, it is allowed to have combat more in line with something like Magic, where you declare attackers, then your opponent declares blockers, and then you check, you know, who attacked, who blocked, what have you. But that isn't what I want to talk about, because that does have a lot of cascading effects through other parts of design. But I want to talk about the ways Dice Masters changes how luck works, or how luck mitigation works. The big one being that you just have a free reroll every turn. I wanted to go back and play Quarriors with this to see if it changes things, but in Dice Masters, once per turn you can reroll any of the dice you've rolled. But yeah, so it means that if you do roll all resources, all energy in that game is what it's called, you could reroll some of them to try and get a different face, mm-hmm. one that you could maybe field and attack and block with, what have you. The other big thing is that there is a separate phase, or a separate, what's it called, zone, called the standby zone, where when creatures die in Dice Masters, instead of going to your discard, they go to standby, where they get rolled at the start of your next turn. But then also there's other effects that allow you to move dice into your standby. So there is a lot more... there's a lot more of a chance that you will be rolling more than just the dice you drew for that turn, and it doesn't feel as bad when you block, because it usually means you can just re-roll the die again.
Mm-hmm.
And so, in that way, they're able to fix both, like, the feels-bad aspect of having to just sacrifice something to the Blood God whenever you get attacked, and they are able to provide you with more chances to roll dice. Because then you can then also, of course, use your reroll on those dice. But, like, mm-hmm. adding just one reroll per turn helps a lot.
I mean, and I, you know, I can see why maybe if the designers had come up with that standby idea for this game, I can see why they may have left it out, just because the game is very simple as mm-hmm. it is. And maybe it was a goal to keep the game pretty simple. You know, this Quarriors that does not have much complexity to it in its rule set, but just adding a free reroll every turn, like that's less than a sentence
right
in the rule book, you know, that would have made the game maybe that adds one phase to a turn, but a turn already has like five phases in this game. I don't think they're worried about that, but yeah, I agree. Like adding a reroll or something would go a long way, because those feels bad moments in this game feel really bad.
Right.
Like, and just, you bought all these creatures, you draw them from the bag, you know, you're super excited, like, oh, they have so many cool faces to them. And then you toss them out there and you just see the Quiddity symbol, which is a teardrop.
Yeah.
You know, and teardrops start falling down your face because you feel sadness that you don't get to do anything that turn. Now you have to wait for everybody else's turn to pass before you even draw new dice, much less roll them.
Yeah, and I mean, so Dice Masters having like more complex combat does make it more interactive, but I feel like Quarriors combat was designed to like prevent people from targeting people, if that makes sense. Like, sure. I understand why they would make it so that combat has you attack everybody. Because, yeah, that just prevents you from ganging up. It prevents, like, monarching, crowning mm-hmm. might be a good term for it, to not use a gendered term. But like, I think that part is understandable, but yeah, crowning, just it.
Crowning reminds me of childbirth.
Gross. But yeah.
And you know what else reminds me of childbirth?
What?
I don't know. I was gonna say, bring it back to this game, but I couldn't think of a clever way.
Yeah, but
this game,
it just feels like the mixture of the combat and the randomness is what makes this feel so weird. Mm-hmm. In that, if they would have handled the randomness better, then maybe being able to counterplay people with different blockers would have been better. You know,
maybe it needs some sort of like, I don't know. I think my mind goes to like just redesigning the cheaper creatures to give you more, even more reasons to go for them.
Yeah.
You know, and maybe some sort of just like catch up mechanic or some reason for like, if they're going to be destroyed, there are some creatures that benefit from being destroyed or give you some benefit when they are destroyed, but that doesn't stop your opponent's big creatures from scoring anyways. So they need to give you an even bigger benefit, I think, maybe.
Right. Having more of a reason to block something. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't deal your attack damage to the attacker in this game. maybe that would have been too complex, but maybe it would have helped. I don't know. Because sometimes it just feels like blocking is just like the world's tiniest violin starts playing.
Yeah, I would say, yeah, if some sort of overhaul of blocking or like creature, giving creatures some more agency in the blocking process, because if that's going to be the main way that you interact with your opponent and make interesting decisions throughout the game, you know, let's add some spice to it.
Right. Maybe. I will say this would be an interesting game as like a new designer to try and play around with different randomness systems.
Mm-hmm.
This is something that like I've seen in different game design textbooks or like the Scouts game design merit badge is an encouragement of like messing with the rules of existing games to see what effects those have on other parts of the game. I think this game is really interesting in that since it has no luck mitigation, you could add your own and then see what effect that had, maybe to sort of study it a bit.
Sure.
Yeah. So that is, I guess, the one silver lining.
Yeah, we'll leave that as our parting, as a parting prompt for our listeners. And I guess I also want to just throw out there, I am a little curious still to try this out in two-player mode.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe our listeners should follow us on social media, and we'll just release a little bit of a statement after the release of this episode, after we get a chance to play the two-player mode to see if our thoughts are stick around for anything that changes. Or if they do change, you can find out then. But until then, I believe that'll be the end of our discussion on Quarriors.
Seems like
Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening.
We'll see you next episode.
See ya.